Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Skating, hating, get a nigga chased around down the block for blocks. I don't give a fuck about you or you, you too, nigga. Get your ass whooped and mopped on YouTube, nigga. Show me what it's about. You can't fool a fool, nigga, motherfucker. Kick cack and see cool, nigga.
Kryptonite,
motherfucker. Kick cack and see cool,
yeah,
nigga.
Yeah. Welcome to the planet Krypton, where niggas get gripped on. It's that tripped on with Teflon. Straight after the fool. Kit Kat can see cool. Dipping in the 6-4 with a pistol. Slipping on Cisco, pumping on crypto. Rolling on Dane to Dane with a super bad bitch with the lowest lane. Yeah, see walking on water. That's how we do it in California. Original gangster shit. I flip the script like pencil flick. Bizarro world. Khakis, Converse, and Jimmy Curl.
On that OG though, kicking cacks, seeing cool with my niggas, we on a mission. If you motherfuckers tripping, I'ma fucking pop a clip in. End of the story, yeah, you know how I'm riding. West Coast where it's at, but I'm Compton East side. Dust the tree, steady smashing through the city. G, if I ain't getting it in, niggas know where I really be. Shout out to my looks, the TGs, BGs, and the OGs, you know me. Put your dick in the dirt if you won't be. Smoking while I sun out, and you know I'm gone crippin'. Not if you living by the gun, you better keep your pistol tight. Well, lesson learned by this little youngster from the streets, from the east side, south for the CPT. Real G's from the streets, you get hit with the chrome. We real with it, tell them niggas don't slip the pawn.
Gang bang, roller skating, hating, get a nigga chased around down the block for blocks. I don't give a fuck about you or you, you too, nigga. Get your ass whooped and mopped on YouTube, nigga. Show me what it's about. You can't fool a fool, nigga, motherfucker. Kick cack and see cool, nigga.
Kryptonite.
Cool, nigga.
I can get it shaking, white dollars and black phantoms. Niggas wanna holler, we hollering back at them. Fuck if you didn't know, you bout to learn now. I'm turned the fuck up, the club get burnt down. We banging no wax, my gun get too hot. Bumping the two pops. fly hanging out the rooftop, bulletproof shoots, armored doors, street beefing with me eating carnivores. My gangster so hard, my gangster Bogart. Give me in the headphones on the 3 and the 4 yard. West Coast Sin City, you can charge it to the game. I ain't giving a bitch shit, not a goddamn thing. Play haters hate me cause I knock they dames. Rock they mic and then hop they frame. Stop they bike and then block they lane. Top they price and then pop they brain like.
Soon as you see me, it's khakis and a beanie. I'm a neighborhood nigga writing my rhymes in graffiti. But my 9 turns into a squirter. And when I pull it out, it shine like the Silver Surfer. I'm on Western with a bottle of Jack. Yo, tell me where this ratchet model and that. She can swallow my dick, you can swallow my gat. And as a matter of fact, I just happen to rap. Plus I used to live in Hawthorne, slip was blasting the mat. Niggas in the whack, stuffed in the trash in the back. Buried in the alley, this is your grand finale here in Killer Cali. So that's right, enemies mics made a kryptonite. Blew everything, nigga, we gon' kryptonite. And we gon' trip tonight, and we gon' sip tonight. Fuck your bitch tonight, she just a flip, the nigga slip was right. It's an L.A. thing, 4 times 10 with 6 on the end. Got Remy Martin mixed with my chin, it's Westside.
Gang bang, roller skating, hating, get a nigga chased and ran down the block for blocks. I don't give a fuck about you or you, you too, nigga. Get your ass whooped and mopped on YouTube, nigga. Show me what it's about, you can't fool a fool, nigga. Motherfucker, kick cack and see cool, nigga.
The G-Lokes, the supposed to show to see the closer. High off Doja, pistol out the holster. True West Coaster, banging is the culture. Low lows, hoes and gangsters with the funk crap. Play me like a punk, then fuck all discussions. I don't do no bluffing, slugs will hit your pumpkin. Killer Cali streets where them khakis heavy creased. Homie stacking cheese, but get active when it's beef. Packages are deep, jacking with the heat. Mashing like a G, never basking in defeat. Demands my respect, from hands to the tech. My city don't allow off brands on the set. Fuck what you rep, we crimp it to the death. Lokes, spray the coat, silver satin, getting wet. Tax on our chest, back on the neck. Scoring up flesh from the wars we address. Royal blue, baby blue, light blue, dark blue. Fat blue laces in my chucks when I walk through. Slip New York too, what a nigga gon' do? Gang bang like a motherfucker to the song through. Kingpin, D-Threat, enemy, E3, 6-0, Watergate, 4-6, CC. Hawthorne, Long Beach, reppin' for the gangsters. Kryptonite, this the shit that keep niggas bang.
Kryptonite.
All right, y'all. We are episode 551 of Off the Cuff Radio. I'm your host, King A, the media assassin. This show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Jesse Boutique, Core Financial, Da Vinci Clothing. And until we wait for our guests to join us, we're going to chop it up about the latest events that's going on in the sporting world, hip-hop world, you name it. I got my host, T-Max, with the facts in the building. It's good.
What it do, what it do. Walker Cup Radio. We are live and direct on this terrific Tuesday. I am T-Max with the facts. Shout out to our calls on Spirit Lost, Sandman, Lady Ken Chill, of course, Dirty Basement Radio and King. I mean, we here, man. I mean, we got a lot to talk about before our guest comes in.
Good, man. Like, first of all, I want to thank everybody that took time to make this our 551st show. Like, that's a milestone itself right there.
Yes, it is. Thank y'all. Thank y'all. We couldn't do it without y'all. You know, our faithful listeners, our faithful viewers on the YouTube channel, everybody around the world that supported Off the Cuff since day one, and even for those that weren't day ones, you still one day decided to get on the movement, and we are so thankful. We're so blessed. We appreciate all of you.
A big milestone that is. A lot of shows will literally tap out by the 20th episode.
You know, King, I was listening to the joint we did with Razzcast earlier, just listening to the clip and how he congratulated us in terms of the consistency he, you know, gave us. You know, one thing about it is to commit yourself to this. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes energy, it takes persistence, it takes patience, and it takes an unwavering and undeniable belief in what you're doing. This is something that for anybody who has a genuine love for the culture, who wants to speak on anything and just knows how to really, really articulate it in a fashion that reaches the masses in a real way, you know, you're going to find your voice. We did, and we're still doing it. The main thing is, no matter what anybody says to you about you having a dream and anything you want to do, whether this or whatever your endeavor is, keep believing, keep striving, keep rising. Don't ever let nobody say what you can and cannot do. You know, you are the start that sets the spark, but that spark turns into something absolutely tremendous in your talent. And we all got one. So, you know, we just kept pushing, and here we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And anybody want to listen to the show, call number is 516-531-9596. Also going to have the episode that we did with Lil Six up on YouTube this week. Big shout out to him. Representing Sac Town. We had a dope deal with him last week.
Shout out to the 916. So, yeah,
we definitely look forward to seeing that. And we also have our episode for everybody who's looking for it as well. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple, we're on Pocket Cast, we're on Google Podcast. We damn near everywhere, man. So there's no reason for nobody to miss an episode of us. And we're on iHeartRadio as well. Just type us up and we'll pop right up.
Universal with the frequency, we ain't letting up. You can catch the wave anytime, you know. Just tune in on any of the aforementioned channels that King said, and, you know, just check us out. You know, get familiar. You know, we're going to be here for a while with this because we've been doing it.
Those death, brother, man. And, you know, the hot topic of the night, the hot topic of the night is this.
Yep.
Well, and this is sending the airwaves flowing right now. Is LeBron James going to hang it up?
Well, when we look at what happened this year, the Lakers overachieved. But, you know, getting off to, I believe, a 3-10 start, 13 games in, a rookie coach, a team that was young at a lot of levels. You know, you got Lonnie Walker, you know, Austin Rivers, you know, it's like, you know, it's so many people who, you know, it was something that for what the Lakers did, Austin Reeves rather, if I'm flubbing the name, go ahead, correct me, King, or anybody that's listening, you know, but like I said, you know, we were looking at a situation where the Lakers were pretty much in a semi-rebuilding. You know, you had the old guard with Anthony Davis, you know, LeBron, of course, and they managed to pull it together. You know, they had a hot streak like some teams get through the playoffs because they just demolished Golden State. And they just made Golden State look like they were just I mean, they just made them look boys look old. I mean, what they did to, you know, before people say the Lakers are washed, let's look at what they did. They beat the number two team in the West, which were the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, and not only beat them, those last couple of games, King, they beat them down.
Beat them down and sent Ja Morant back to game banging.
I mean, look, you know, what your man's talking about, you know, Dylan Brooks talking about, yeah, he poked bears. I'm like, yeah, you fucked around and you got mauled. You know, the Grizzlies got mauled. Talking about he don't respect nobody until they give them, talking about he don't respect nobody until they give them 40. Well, the whole team decided to chip in that last week, that last put out game and give you your squad 40.
Pack them up, boy.
Yeah, but I mean, they beat the number two team in the West, and then they beat the defending champions, you know, from last year with Golden State. And you just sometimes hit those streaks. If you've ever played team sports, whether professionally or amateur, high school, rec league, whatever, college, pro, you understand how sometimes you hit a gear where it's just in perfect synergy. everybody's clicking. Sometimes that effort is sustained, that momentum is keeps moving, and sometimes you hit a wall. When we're looking at the Nuggets have been knocking on that door for a very, very long time, for at least the past 3-4 years, and they've really, I don't care what nobody says, Nikola Jokic, he's for real. Jamal Murray a couple years ago, some people said, had he not gotten hurt in the playoffs a couple years ago, the Nuggets could have gone further. He sat all last year, but Jamal Murray has really become a force. Jeff Green, they have the veteran presence. They're young. They're wired. And they struck gold going to the finals. They are, for a little bit of trivia for y'all, they are, the last ABA team to reach the finals. Of course, the Pacers did, the Nets did, and the Spurs have. So the Nuggets are the last ABA team to make it. And it's well-deserved. Congratulations to them, because them boys are young and they hungry. Presumably, with what's happened with Miami and Boston, Boston got them last night, but presumably Miami is going to finish it off in the next game. It's going to be a dogfight. Jimmy Butler, the Heat, Jimmy made a promise last year when they got bounced. He's like, we're going to be back, and we're going to be back in the same position next year, and we're going to bring it. And a year later, he's backing up those words. So, King, it's interesting to see what it's going to be for these finals coming up. I would love to see Jimmy get a ring. God bless him. To me, he's a Hall of Famer without one, but he gets a ring. He's over the top with it. That puts him over. For Denver, I always love to see the young kids get in there and do what they do. And like I said, they've been knocking on that door for a long time. So we'll see what happens.
I made my little post yesterday, and of course it went viral. It actually went viral, believe it or not.
Okay.
But I said, went viral. A lot of people talking about it. A lot of people chiming in on it. I said this will possibly be the most boring NBA finals of all time. You know, I had to poke the bear a little bit. The reason why I say this is because I talked about this on Screwball. Like, what makes these games interesting is rivals. Everything, it got to be a rivalry-based situation involved. And see,
right,
the Super Bowl is different. It's different because, think about it, that's one game, winner take all right there. So it's going to be tense. It has to be tense. It has to be aggressive. Who's going to watch seven games of these niggas like that? We don't even know these dudes like that. Like, not put butts in the seats. Put butts in the seats is the rivalry that the Celtics and the Lakers have. That's like the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Right.
Packers and the Bears. Like, sports need rivalries, and that creates better competition. And, I'm looking at it from a casual standpoint.
Right.
This ain't going to put butts in the seats. Like, who don't even remember Toronto when they beat Golden State? Nobody even remembers that series. The funny thing is, I joked about this too. The referees try their hard to keep LeBron in, though. They try to keep us in.
Well, you're gonna get that. Everybody screams about the calls and everything, and this, that, and the other. Let's just keep it brick. If you've earned your place of greatness in whatever sports you have, you're going to get calls because you are the brand. You are recognized. And I'm gonna put this shit to bed where everybody loves to say these games are fixed. Yes, I'm gonna say it on Off the Cuff Radio. Y'all can say whatever y'all want to comment. Do you realize the level of participation that it has to go into, whether football, basketball, baseball, whatever, for the game to be fixed? Everybody literally has to be in on it. That's just what it is. The level of competition is too immense. Everybody has to be in on it in terms of, now, they're going to be called. that are going to go a certain way. We're not going to say that corruption doesn't happen. See Tim Donaghy from back in the day, the NBA referee that was busted in that gambling scandal. But realistically, to put the players in terms of saying, well, such and such, the games are rigged. No, the games are not rigged. There are questionable calls in any game. Hell, there are questionable calls in regular season games, let alone championship and division games. But ultimately, the players ultimately are going to decide the outcome in terms of it. You know, the players still have to play. And that's just what it is. But realistically, when we look at it, like you said, King, rivalries are the brand in the sport because rivalries are familiar. They evoke strong emotions from different fan bases. They are the epitome of competition and heated rivalry between teams that have a long historic history of combat with each other. Conversely speaking, though, I don't think it's a bad thing either to see new teams come in because everything evolves, it changes, it morphs, and you have to understand that the game moves on. You know, we had Dr. J, then came Michael. You know, after Michael, you know, you had that wave simultaneously, you know, with Kobe and LeBron coming in. You know, you had Shaq. You know, you had all these guys coming in who, you know, you had Shaq. Now you got Joel Embiid. You know, you got so many. You know, you got Victor Wembanyama getting ready to come into the league, you know, in this summer's draft. So the game is always going to move on. And it's always about highlighting who's going to be next. You know, all the players, the game is going to move on. You know, shout out to Carmelo Anthony, you know, with his recent retirement, a long and storied Hall of Fame career, 4 gold medals. Carmelo came in 20 years ago, and, you know, he's hanging them up. So the game moves on. And it's always good to see the new guys. You know, it's always good to see the new guys. You know, we got, you know, much love to Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, you know, who Steph's been in the league 14 years. KD's been in the league, you know, 15, 16 years. You know, these are not spring chickens anymore. They're among the GOATs at their positions. Steph, of course, being the greatest shooter ever. Kevin Durant being one of the greatest all-around scorers ever, small forward, you know. So they're in the prime. They're in the twilight.
The game has definitely athletically advanced. Definitely has.
Absolutely.
But what I'm saying is, competitive instinct declined to me because.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say this, man, and this is just me. This is just me. Come from that era where he was very competitive. I'm very competitive, as you can see how I sometimes bark at our adversaries on different radio shows. I'm sometimes very competitive that way. That's just how we are. We're not buddies.
Right.
We're not chums. We just want to – competition is good. Now, see,
right.
If I was LeBron, I would not sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sleep at night knowing – these niggas sweat me on my court. I would literally have to be in the gym right now. You know what I mean? I would sleep in the gym right now if I was LeBron right now. I couldn't sleep.
Right.
Because it's one thing, the rules. Everybody plays
right.
Balls.
Right.
That's the way the world, that's the way the game is. But sweep
right.
on your home court? No. That's why I made that post earlier, like, look, LBJ, you can't go out like this. You got to get these niggas. You got to go ahead, make some changes, contact your management, make some trades, bring some people in. You got to get that monkey off your back. Off your back. You can't go, we can't ride to the sunset on the sweep, dog. You got, even if you don't win a ring, nigga, you got to beat these niggas. That's the way it got to look.
I mean, King, remember in 1995 when Jordan came back mid-season?
Yes.
And he lost to, and they lost to the Magic in the Eastern in the conference finals.
Yeah.
And you know, and I mean, Jordan wasn't 100%. Jordan, we're old enough to remember that series. Jordan was only about maybe 50%. But he wasn't, he didn't have his legs under him. He still didn't have that game stamina just yet, but he was still giving it to him. But, you know, Jordan ran out of gas. And that's not to diss the greatest ever. You know, Michael was not in game conditioning for where he was. But he, but what happened the next year?
And he swept the niggas, man, because he did what I said. I suggested LeBron to do.
Ooh, he punished everybody that won MVP, Finals MVP.
He did what I suggest LeBron.
Yeah.
He did what I suggest LeBron should do. Go to the office, mm-hmm. make some changes, bring some new players. What did they do that year? They brought Dennis Rodman in there. They needed a big man to replace Horace Grant. And they went and got a shooting guard. Got Randy Brown.
Steve Kerr. I mean, they got Ron Harper. Steve Kerr, I believe, already been there. Yeah, Ron Harper, they got him. You know, they got Jeb Bushler, you know, Luke Longley. They had a great top to bottom team in terms of everybody that knew their role. And they when they really got it together, it was a well oiled machine. You know?
And Jordan, he said it so he couldn't sleep at night. It was like that's why he went to the gym. He lost that weight. He got in the best shape of his life. They just torched everybody that whole 95-96 season. Niggas won 72 games.
Yeah. But that's a competitive nature. For those that are old enough to remember.
And LeBron got to have that right now. I'm like, I'll go on his page after this show. I'm like, nigga, you can't go out like this. You know you're a legend. You know you're the king. You know you already on top for accolades. You're the scoring king right now. But you gotta erase this monkey off your back, man. I'm sorry. Niggas swept.
You know, when we look at the
they brought brooms to the court, dog.
You know, King, when we look at this current climate of social media and how it is, how sports culture is further, in exposure by sports media. There's definitely leaves a lot more pundits speak on it. Back in the day, we didn't have that. So it was really, you watched the game, you really relied on the news outlets, the sports channels to really speak on it. Now we have ubiquitous sports presence all over, you know, in terms of many outlets online, a lot of people on, you know, online with their own channels speaking on it. I got to say this, I got to get this off my chest. A lot of hate is directed towards LeBron. Honestly, I don't get it. This man takes care of his kids. He's a solid citizen. He actually has his own school that he built and, you know, was sending kids to college. You know, has been a voice for social justice, a great teammate. And it's like, yet and still, he gets so much hate for his perceived shortcomings. But I only look at it because the social media and everybody wants to bark at him because it's easy to do it. As much as I'm a Michael Jordan fan, Mike was not perfect. And they would have, I mean, some of the shit Mike did, the stories that we know are true, you know, with the gambling, you know, I mean, of course, when we saw The Last Dance, him and Steve Kerr talked about the fight that they had in practice. I mean, you know, and this was the 90s when this all happened. So it was talked about, but there was no film or footage to, like, really give a face to the incident. Man, it would have killed Mike back in the day for, I mean, hanging out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, fighting with teammates. I mean, Mike was also an insane trash talker, you know, and there wasn't a lot of cameras on that in the game. You know, the game was more covered from the aspect of playing, not necessarily what players were saying to each other on the court like that, although you heard stories. So it's a different dynamic now, y'all, because everything is more 24/7. We're watching players. We're seeing more of these guys outside of their job, which is black men, first and foremost, lovers of our people, and just lovers of everybody in general. We tell a lot of these young brothers out here, it's a different time. Watch what you're doing out there, you know, because whether the criticism you get is fair or not, people are watching and people are going to have opinions. And if you do something or people perceive you are lacking in something, they're going to say something. And the last thing we want is somebody's image and their brand getting messed up because people want to run their mouth on something they don't know much about. But shout out to LeBron. Yes, this is something that is obviously a dark spot in his career, but it doesn't diminish the luminary of greatness that he has shined through for 20 years. And if nobody will say it, LeBron, I'll say it. We appreciate everything you've done, and a lot of people are going to miss you when you're gone in terms of what you brought to the game. But you got to come back one more year to erase that stain, though. We just saying.
Oh, you just can't, bro.
I mean, if it's a seven-game series and you gave your best,
it happens. Even if they got one in, I wouldn't have been like, okay, at least you got one in. But
right.
Though, niggas brought brooms to the court. Disrespected the dog. And you know L.A. niggas ain't letting that ride, dog. You can't just go to – you can't just sit in your castle like that. Not in L.A. especially. L.A.,
nah.
New York, Philly – in places like that, you cannot do that. Or even Boston, for that matter.
Look, the memes,
you can't just
memes
do that,
dogs,
bro. You gotta make this right. Kobe in the skies right now.
Yeah.
Kobe in the skies right now. Tell them niggas, off. Take your jerseys off, nigga. Take them jerseys off, nigga.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Kobe and Gigi. Yeah, because... like I said, I've said on record that I was never really a fan of Kobe in terms of his personality. Always respected him as a player. Didn't always like how he approached things with people, you know, but I always respected Kobe as a player, and Kobe was competitive, and he was going to give it everything he had, and his thing was, nah, we not going out like this. You know,
Can't, man. Anyway, we're going to definitely talk about sports.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you can also check out the sports view on Screwball Radio. We have a sports segment, me and Common. We had a dope build about that.
Shout out to y'all with Screwball Radio doing big things.
Yes, sir. I want to talk about this here, man. This is just weird to me. You know how in rap music, this just happened out of nowhere, man.
I'm laughing because I know where you're
going.
I
swear to God, man. It's like the most random beast that just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Like, remember how it was back in the day, guys, where you could tell by there's going to be a clash of the titans. Heard it with the Subliminals with Nas and Jay. Heard it with Eminem and Royce. You heard it with Cannabis and Eminem. You heard it with KRS and
MC Shan.
Nelly. Even Nelly. KRS and Nelly.
Okay.
And MC Shan.
Yeah.
And who else was doing subliminal bars? Big and Pocky.
Right.
You know, you sense competition since it was going to go there. And we was eventually going to pick sides. The way this shit is now, niggas just beef randomly. And we don't even know why. We don't know the context of it. It just happens overnight. And this shit is Rick Ross and DJ Envy. How the hell did this happen? And it's serious.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, hold on. DJ Envy and Rick Ross? over a car show? The fuck?
I mean, it's...
I'm going to read people the context. I'm going to read people the context. Big shout out to hiphopdx.com.
Absolutely.
So this is the headline. Say, down DJ Envy clowns Rick Ross with Officer Ricky impression. Everything you do is a lie. Oh, my God. Said DJ Envy had taken his feud with Rick Ross to another level by dressing up as in a cop uniform as Officer Ricky on The Breakfast Club. Oh, have mercy. Envy donned the Navy police uniform on Monday, May 22nd, taking a shot at the MMG mogul's past stint as a correctional officer in Miami in the mid-90s. This has been a continuous point of discussion throughout his career. Ross went at me for what, 10 to 12 hours? I could tell he was rattled, Envy said, referring to Rosé's recent gigs at him ahead of their competing car shows in the coming weeks. I could tell something was wrong, so I wore this today to make him feel more comfortable. He also said, I do have a boss. You lucky Dame Dash won't hear to hear that. I do have a boss. Shout out to Bob Pittman. That's one of my bosses. He actually owns iHeart, but he has a boss too. John Vintnot is his boss. That's the Miami Correctional Facility Ward. That's his boss. Rick Ross still gets a pension from those corrections. Oh, man. Envy then channeled his inner Rosé and adopted his deep voice by recounting his history working with law enforcement. He said it like this. Started off as a football player. He kicked you off the team because you wouldn't stay by the showers. Then watch the boys take a shower. Then you moved to corrections, and what did you do? Watch the boys take a shower. After playing the audio clip of Ross explaining what he took the CO job at the behest as one of his big homies, Envy said, that's not a boss, that's a follower. My big homie told me to do it. That's not a boss, that's a sucker. Think I'm Big Meech? No, you're Officer Ricky. I think I'm Larry Hoover? No, you Officer Ricky. Shit got personal. Then, this is where it really got personal, T-Mac. This is where it really got disrespectful. He said,
okay.
Breakfast Club co-host then blasted Rick Ross for not helping his former MMG artist Gunplay, who partners started a GoFundMe earlier this year to raise money for their newborn daughter medical bills following her emergency open heart surgery. That's your brother. Take care of your brother, he said. I would never in a million years allow Charlamagne the God to do a GoFundMe. That's boss moves. You're actually not a boss. You're a sucker. Wow. Envy continued his tirade by claiming that the Port of Miami rapper is fake, everything you do is a lie, and even compare his law enforcement history to Tekashi 6ix9ine cooperate with authorities. Him and 6ix9ine are really complete the same. They both work with law enforcement. I'm really surprised this industry has never checked him or talked about him correctional officer status. Everybody let it slide. Oh. Fumes sparked last week when Rick Ross declared on Drink Champs that DJ Envy was never on his level when it comes to hosting car shows. Get into an increasingly disrespectful war of words on social media.
You said, I'm not on your level. You proved that I am, because every sentence in you mentioned is me.
Envy said Monday, on the X-Ratchet,
you sleep with me on your mind. Well, he wants me to be in the shower.
Shit got personal fast. So, where are we at right now? Because, you know, I knew this was going to go this far because I'm going to be admitted, you know, we both like Rosé. Rosé, he took it a little further. When you know, when you talk about nigga, you know, talk about Beans Rage and, you know, saying that his white side is affected his dog side. Then when you're inviting a man's wife, his kids to clean your pool, I understand it's going to go a certain place, but dang, I didn't expect this to go personal. What's your thoughts, T-Max?
Well, let's break down some things, first and foremost. Shout out to the whole MMG. Shout out to Jeter K. Shout out to, you know, Big Slab. Shout out to Rosé. Shout out to, you know, Billboard, Benny, Trop. Everybody at MMG that we know. Brett Barish, of course, at Bel Air.
Yeah.
You know, so let's break this down bit by bit. Shameless plug coming. If y'all have not read Rick Ross's books, Hurricanes and The Perfect Day to Boss Up, get them, because those are must reads and you'll get the whole story. Now this is from Hurricanes, because the fact is this: if you read Hurricanes, tells the whole story about it in terms of what was going on about him leaving, which he did have a football scholarship. He was not kicked off the team. Ross left on his own volition because it just – it was different for him from where he grew up out in Miami. You know, Matchbox projects, all of that, things he had seen in the streets. It was a different – he mentally – he wasn't there in terms of what it would be to be in college. The man is smart as shit. Let's just say that now. Rose is a maven of magnificence in terms of how he has built an MNG empire, a multiple millionaire doing what he's done. So intelligence is not an issue for this man. This man is extremely talented, smart, and savvy. He just left school like a lot of people do. It just wasn't for him at the time. Now, in terms of it, and he speaks on the fact also, too, about him being a prison guard. Now, let's get this out the way now. And I'm tired of everybody trying to meld all this stuff in terms of semantics and then low-key trying to shame somebody for having a job. And then also not understanding how this street shit works. So let's break this down. Number one. He wasn't in school. He needed a job. He got a job. He was in the street. If you read the book, he alludes to this. He had some, he was able to get in terms of that job, although he never gave up anything that he did behind them walls outside of what his job was as a correction officer. He had no criminal record. So he, I mean, look, we all know what goes on behind those walls. We know if you've been on the block, they got people to go in there because people, they need, you know, the bosses on the street need somebody to go in to handle stuff for them. And you cannot get that type of job if you are selling. Rose was there for, I believe, 18 months. And he spoke on this in the book, King, because he says when this whole thing was 50, which really Envy is just copy and pasting on, he says in retrospect he should have just came clean about it from the beginning. Rose does say that he wishes that he did kind of just address it fully from the beginning as opposed to trying to deny it. But there is no shame and the fact that the man had a real job. Everybody, look, you and me have real jobs. We do this show. We, you know, we would love to get paid off of this one day, you know. But until that day comes and we're claiming it, we just enjoy doing it. But we work regular jobs. And that, you know what? That's okay. We're okay with that, you know. This shaming of trying to say people are in a certain position that they were at a certain time in their life, it's lame. You know, I'm sure if Rose wanted to put out some money, he could find out what Envy used to do before he got into radio. You know? So we all have a past. Going furthermore, Rose is... He was a prison guard. He wasn't a police officer. He wasn't a CIA agent. He wasn't a DEA agent. He was a prison guard. Everybody says that's law enforcement. Law enforcement are people that are actually on the streets who are actually busting crimes. He was a prison guard. He's in there making sure the prisoners are following routines and protecting them if need be, you know, from other prisoners. That's not the same thing as being actually on the street, being a police officer or being an undercover cop, a detective or anything like that. That's not the same thing. So this whole semantic of trying to say, well, Ross police, well, guess what? If he was police, then he learned a lot being deep cover, working, you know, from the inside in terms of being around a lot of criminals. So if anything, you need to respect that man more for him being able to get on the inside like he did, because When Envy wants to get on this tangent saying Ross is fake, we got people in Miami. And we have not heard anybody say nothing about Ross being phony, even after the book came out. Because Ross tells some stories in that book of everything that went on in his life, you know, from the beginnings of his birth to when he got on the street to when he started making music to when he really, really, you know, became big. You have not heard anybody come out there, King, if I'm missing something, please correct me, brother. I've not heard anybody come out there and say Ross was lying about anything in terms of what went on in the streets. You know, shout out to Whole Slab, you know, Slab Father, Slablicious, you know, Slab Broadcasting Live, because he speaks about Slab very prominently in the book because they were running together in the streets. You know, had a chance to meet Slab. Haven't met Rosé, but I met Slab. Great guy. And the thing is, these are real street dudes. You know, these guys really were out there. And I've not heard anybody say, and when you talk about the people that he references on albums, like Big Ike, Convertible Burke, the Booby Boys, Triple C Cartel, those are real goons out there. These are real hitters. You know, you're not going to just mention a name on an album and you didn't deal with them in a certain fashion. And none of them guys have come back to do anything to them. So that lets you know that these guys have a relationship with him in some capacity. One thing about Rosé, if you've studied him over the years, Rosé doesn't back down from anything. He went head-to-head with 50, and he triumphed. You know, he's always been a guy.
For the grace of God of having a good musical ear and having connections, because 50 was on that nigga neck. I don't know how he survived that. He had to adapt his strategy.
Yeah, and the thing was, and he speaks on it in the book, too. You know, he speaks on that issue he had with 50 in the book. Like I said, he tells in Hurricanes, he speaks on everything in it. But Ross has always stood 10 toes down, has always been resolute to not let anybody punk him. And I respect him for that. Jeter K, you know, when he came in as the management arm, who was initially his security guy and then eventually moved up to being his road manager, Jeter brought more of a, you know, definitely a more stronger presence to the team. And, you know, shout out to the Bronx where he's from, 183rd. You know, so Ross is not a guy who by any means is a punk. You ain't going to chump him. He's heavily connected out there in Miami, all over the country, in L.A., Compton. You know, I won't give up the names out there to people he knows, but we know. but he's connected with some real people out in the West Coast, you know, that you don't want to mess with. Shout out to, you know, in Vegas, heavy hit out there, him and Nader, Nevada. Those are his folk out there, two solid ones. Ross has people all over. That man can move around and doesn't have any problems with anybody. But I pray for anybody that decides they want to have a problem with him. You know, and people get this whole thing about it all wrong. And I'm serious when I say this. See, a lot of times people love to take shots at rappers because a lot of times they feel like rappers are not going to get active. And to a degree, they're right. Because the fact is, with a rapper, especially as successful as Ross is, you have to stay away from the bullshit in the street because that is jeopardizing your brand. He has generational wealth that will be passed down to his children's children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren. But that doesn't mean he's not going to maybe send some people to have a conversation with some people if he feels like things are getting a little bit out of hand. And this is what people have to understand. That man's reach is long, if it really goes there. I remember when he got into it with your girl, what was it, Creation? from Oakland, yeah. White Girl Mob, and Lil Debbie, you know, and he got into it with her. He said, I'll spend $50,000 a day just to fuck your life up for fun. I was like, I was like, wow.
I'm looking at this situation, but see, the thing is, though, in Envy, he went and also took a picture with 50 Cent and everything. I'm like, okay, now you're trying to turn this into something else. At the same time, though, see, now you're trying to, now it's turning into something else. Like, what? They were saying wrestling. It started off into a fun work, now it turned to a straight shoot. Now we're getting real disrespectful. On top of that, how many times has Ross been on the Breakfast Club and you ain't say nothing about this? You ain't never ask him. Niggas was scared. Never asked Rose about the correctional officer's background. But many times to do it. Why are you gonna do it now?
King, remember when Gucci was on the Breakfast Club and Envy was looking kind of shook?
Yeah, because he was trying to ride Jeezy's coattails on the doing the beat. You know what I'm saying? Because he ain't know.
Yeah.
Cause just keep in mind, this was the Animal Gucci.
Yeah, this was Fat Gucci. This was Kick Bitches Out the Car Gucci. this was the Gooch Goo-Wop. This was like,
yeah.
You know, this was, you know, Hood Gucci. The Gucci you see now is domesticated Gucci, husband Gucci, daddy Gucci, peaceful Gucci. But he's still with the shit Gucci. You know, But the thing is with Envy, and this is not a rip on Envy because we respect him for what he's accomplished. All we're going to say to Envy is, Envy, you not that guy from the street like Rosé and them guys are. You're not the same as those guys.
On top of that, your pops was a cop, man. Like, you can't, how you going to sit there and come at Rosé for being a cop and your dad was a cop?
Exactly. I'm like, you know, Envy, you know, you didn't come up the same way Rosé did. So this is a totally different thing. And if anything, you are tripping with Ross because it's a car show. I mean, okay, I get it. You know, y'all jab each other a little bit.
Also,
but
you know, also, I would look at it, be fair and fair, this Ross also kind of took some real, you know, personal jab. Like, you mentioned the man's skin tone and... You understand Envy taking it a sort of way, but now we're going into the skin tone that he brought up Young Dolph, saying that you better pay off Young Dolph family or else. I'm like, you know, it's stuff like that, but it's like this. You never know. You can't joke with these things. Man. You can't joke with these dudes. They very sensitive, man. You don't know what, you don't know. It's a good fella situation all around, man. Like, you don't never know when you're going to get that funny house situation.
Look, you remember that situation with King talking about in Goodfellas? Remember when Billy Batts got a bit too familiar with Tommy and Tommy, you know, had to handle it? You know, and that's a situation where are we forecasting any real drama? No, it's not going to go there. These guys got too much money. And too much celebrity and too much to lose if either one of them really, really lets their feelings get in the way of it. But there could be a situation where maybe somebody speaks to Envy about it and lets them know, like, that's enough.
Another thing I said, too, where he was sitting there naming his bosses, I'm like, you didn't name your boss when Dane was pressing you about having a boss. Nigga was proudly naming his bosses 5 years later, and then when Dame Dash was pressing him about it, he was like, I ain't got no boss. Nigga, please.
The reality is, and we know this, because this goes back into the conversations about everything, about a worker. To be a boss, you have to be a good worker. Ross worked his way to be a position where he is a boss. Envy worked his way into a position where he's the boss to a degree of what he does. But he's not self-sufficient like Rosé is, in the sense that Envy, how do I word this carefully? Envy is a radio show host, and he's the host of a very successful show. But by the same token, people he has to answer to. Ross is a recording artist. Yeah, Ross is a recording artist who has multiple businesses that he's in charge of. You know, Ross could decide if something goes south with a record label, he could just go independent with MMG and just distribute his own music. And he still is the head of his label. And he still is in charge of it. Now, when you
okay,
add
hey, T-Mac. T-Mac.
Yo.
Check it out.
Yo.
Now, check it out. This is what we're going to do now. We're going to hold that thought on this topic here. We're going to probably talk about this after the show. But right now, we got our guest on the line.
Okay.
I'm going to do my little brand introduction for him. I'm trying to get this man on the show for a minute, though, you know, but you know, timing had to be perfect. Our guest tonight is a dope razor-sharp lyricist from the West Coast, kin to legends such as Run 781 and Corrupt Young Gotti. So here on the line to tell us about his musical journey, to talk about his album, The Meat Market, which is dope. You can check that out on all streaming platforms. So welcome, Enemy to Off the Cuff Radio, episode 551. Good, man.
Yep.
Hold on, gotta make sure you
hear me. Hello. Okay, okay.
Are you on?
We got him.
Yeah, make sure this is
working.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right.
Yo, we hear you.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me turn this fan off.
Okay.
All right. Yes, sir. Episode 551 on deck.
Yeah, so what's up with y'all?
What's going on with you, man? Great
good,
to have
man.
You with us.
Shit, man, I can't call it, man. I fucked around and, didn't wake up.
It's all
man,
good, though. It's all good.
Cup,
so usually
man.
We do 2 hours. We usually do 2 hours, though. So sometimes even when guests is late, it's like, yo, they could just chime on in. You know what I mean? And just mesh well with the show. But nevertheless, man, welcome to Off the Cuff Radio. It's been a journey to get you on, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. You know, I'm, hard at work, busy and shit, man. Trying to put all this shit together, man. It's, you know, shit been tedious, man, because, you know, it's just me doing this shit, man. You know, I don't have no big-ass huge team, you know, like I used to, but, you know, I'm doing it now. But it's a little better now, but, you know, it's just me putting all this shit together, man. But, I got people helping me like day one. So, you know, it is what it is. But it's cool, man. How y'all doing, man?
We all good over here.
We good, man.
So in terms of the music, Enemy, I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got in the game, and, I mean, just your history. We got a little bit of time.
All right, well, shit, I've been rhyming since, like, 9 years old. I discovered it, just fucking around with the East Coast music. I love Coupe, Rakim, you know, niggas like that, man. I started off, you know, the shit would come on the radio, and I started off writing a little bit, you know, a little bit at a time. Every time the song come on, I have a little bit more of the song. Until I had the whole song. Then I would go outside, say, you know, the verses to the kids playing outside, but they was like, what the fuck is this nigga doing? But, you know, they was like doing something else, but the attention was on me, like they wanted to hear me do this shit, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of liked that shit, you know what I'm saying? So I kept doing it. And eventually I started writing my own lyrics at 14. So I did that shit for like 2 years, like writing shit to radio with words. Sometimes I just wait to come on again and write words. And I did that shit for like 2 years, you know what I'm saying? And then I started recording at 14 years old. I started recording at Black Hole Recording Studio with Overdose and Kenny McLeod. you know, that's a legendary studio. You know, if you're from California and you've been rhyming for a while and you ain't been there, I don't know what the fuck you're doing. Because the Black Hole Recording Studio is a monument. You've been there. The first location was Inglewood Avenue in Rosecrans. You know, now in the cloud, you got to call him and, you know, plug you up. But, you know, I did that for a while. By the time I was 18, I had like two, three albums, you know, which is pretty good for somebody that did this shit before. So I was taking it to the school. I make little cassettes. You know, I take them to school and, you know, just tell people, I took a picture and put my picture on the front of the cassette. You know, so, you know, to people back then, it was like a real CD. They were like, man, how the fuck you do this? And, you know, I had one copy. So I would let niggas borrow the copy, bring it back and borrow the copy, and they could bring it back, and it was, you know, they was in my blood. You know, from there, I'm being corrupt. That's when my cousin came out here, and from Philly, and, you know, we just teamed up, you know what I'm saying? We started knocking niggas down, you know, battling niggas, and, you know, we was like the most respected niggas around there. You know what I'm saying? As far as on the mic went, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, niggas, I had a little shit going on in the streets and all this shit, and it was just a snowball effect, you know what I'm saying? A nigga became extremely famous, you know, in the street and in school before my first project, and that was 94. With the Jumbo Ruby, DJ Battlecat's first album.
Okay. Legendary producer.
That's on right now today. Rough Dog, you know, Raz Kaz, you know, Chico Coolwater. You know, that's a classic album right there, and that was my first real exposure. You know what I mean? You know, it was people saying the lyrics and shit, and I didn't even know it was out. I found out way later through Raz Kaz, you know. You know, I walk at a party, and he see me, and he's saying my lyrics and shit. I'm like, what the fuck? How the fuck you know that? He's like, you don't know? I didn't know this shit was out. You know what I'm saying? So, I went on it, and it was out. This was years and years later. You know, so, you know, my first official project that actually sold some records was the Tales from the Hood soundtrack. And it went gold. And Spike Lee put that out with 40 Acres of the Mule Music Work. You know, that was my first track. You know, it sold a half a million copies, so I got my first sold record. I was 21 years old. And I never looked back from there, you know what I'm saying? I was the beginning, actually, pretty much. You know, and, you know, niggas started doing everything, going everywhere and doing everything, you know what I'm saying? Corrupt dudes, you know, 95 was when the Dog Pound album came out, so he was on fire. He was like the greatest shit. Corrupt was like the greatest shit during that time, you know what I'm saying? In 95, he's still one of the greatest in my eyeballs, you know what I'm saying? Nobody does what that guy does. No, so, you know, it was a big, that 95 was a big year, you know what I'm saying? Tales from the Hood soundtrack came out, Dog Pound album came out, and then I had my son. You know, I had a brand new kid, you know what I'm saying? So I was just incredibly busy and doing a lot of shit, you know what I'm saying? We had money and we was, it was a big deal, you know, so. After that, you know, I went on all through the 90s, like, on everything. I did a lot of shit. You know, I was, you know, all the 90s shit, I did it. You know, True Crime, Streets of L.A., I was on the Blue Downs album. I did a lot of shit in the 90s. I did a lot of features and a lot of rapping. I went to a lot of parties and I did a lot of rapping and battling niggas and just embarrassing niggas for years. It's just a snowball of my reputation, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, everything got bigger and bigger and bigger. That's it. I got a lot of features, a lot of different features. And, you know, it's just everything got bigger, man. You know, and, I never looked back. You know, as far as like my craft, You know, it's like karate to me. You know, I do it. I'm an autopilot. I just write. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I look up and I just do writing. I'm on autopilot. It's just natural to me. I just write. I don't have to put too much effort into writing. And I'm, you know, and I'm really fucking good. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's pretty much just, you know, it's a craft that I've carried all my whole life. You know, it's not something that I see everybody else doing, and I want to do it now. It's not nothing like that. This was something, the rapping was something that that in my life, I didn't know that I could make money doing it. I didn't know that I could become famous doing it. I didn't know none of it. You know what I'm saying? You know, I started rapping as a kid. You know, I listened to the radio and everything, but it was also a guy that was rapping. He was a big fat guy. He used to lie to everybody and say that he was in the Fat Boys. We all believe it. He was fat as well. You know, but he was rapping ahead about any fucking thing. People paying him to show up at birthday parties and all kind of shit, and he would rap off the top of the head. And that was the first dude that I ever seen do that, you know, freestyle and shit. You know, I was a late freestyler. Most of my shit was paper, you know, but eventually I started freestyling, and now I'm really good at that. But, you know, Corrupt was, you know, when we were together, he was the freestyler. I was, the paper guy. Nobody could fuck with me with my pen, you know what I'm saying? Corrupt is a freestyle guy. He can freestyle off anything. He could read a sign and take the letters off the sign and start like that. You know what I'm saying? The nigga was amazing. He used to do amazing shit. And we used to have, like, crowds and crowds and crowds of people around us. You know, like, bad. We could be walking through the mall, and I would start it off. And next thing you know, 5 minutes later, it's 50 people standing around us. You know, it's just something that I do. It's something that we did, always did. We was always top of the line doing it. You know?
When you look at the art form today of freestyling, enemy, how do you feel in terms of where the art is and how it is respected or not respected by some of today's artists?
That's a good question. I feel like people got the wrong idea of what is most important when it comes to spitting your shit. You know, like, paper is the strongest form of writing. You know, you get your pen and a paper and write that shit down. You know, all that shit is constant to your thought. You know what I'm saying? You had to sit down and think about it. You had to give it the green light. You had to say, this is good enough. I want people to hear this. And then green light it. But if you green light something and you writing the shit ain't good enough, or it's mediocre, or the shit is whack, or it's not to your ability, and you give it the green light, that fucks you up bad. Because it tells people that, hey, this is good enough for me, and I know it's good enough for you. But it's not. You know? So a lot of people feel like freestyle, it's a bigger skill than writing, but it's not. They feel like whatever you can think of off the top of your head, as fast as you can, whatever you come up with, that's real rap. But that's not. The real rapping is the concentrated raps, what you stop and think about. You know what I'm saying? Freestyle is cool, but, you know, it's child's play when it comes to being a master of your craft. You gotta have a pen. If you just freestyling all the time, you're not really doing shit. You know what I'm saying? People praise that shit, but it's, you know, written is the best form of spitting. You know, I was writing for the Diamond Ice Girl when Eazy-E was alive. For the group GPM for Eazy-E, and Eazy used to come and scoop me up and bring me to the girls like two or three times a week, and he would drive me. He would come pick me up in South Central, and we would drive to a street called Motor in Culver City, and I would stay there, you know, for as long as possible. We used to have a lot of fun in there. You know what I'm saying? It was me, Diamond, Silky Fine, Big Chan, and T-Ski. And we used to clown. We used to have so much fun. You know what I'm saying? Rest in peace, Eazy-E, my bro. And, you know, I did a lot of writing. You know, I'm exclusive, though. I don't write for everybody. You just can't walk up to me and be like, hey, I got this much money. Can you write for me? Because 9 times out of 10, if you're not already spitting the right way, I'm not gonna do it. You know, I gotta, you know, I'm exclusive zone. You know, I still do shit for Diamond, and you know, she got some new shit coming. You know, but I'm really careful about who I write with, who I perform with, who I get on songs with. You know, I used to just jump on shit with people. I don't do it no more. You know, I feel like it depreciates value when you vibe with everybody like that. And that's
what you
do.
What you said to me is real, because a lot of times we see artists get caught up in the finances and the fame, but they don't look at the integrity and the longevity, and that their brand is the most important commodity that they possess. I read an article, a post the other day where an artist said that, you know, somebody had approached them. Of course they didn't mention names, but, you know, somebody had approached this artist about, you know, a song. You know, and send them the money. Artist heard a song, thought it was whack, sent the money back.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact is that whether you write for somebody, and we know people have written for people in the game. It's just not a secret. But your name will on those publishing credits and the writing credits. So
right.
You are attached to it. If this is a whack person doing this, and your integrity and your reputation is worth far more than a check somebody can cut for you, where you might cut your own career in half.
Exactly. Bro. You know, you gotta be careful with that, because you know, it can blow up in your face and fuck you up real bad. You know, especially if you're being seen on a lot of different people's shit that ain't paid too many, you know, people don't, you know, it's just about how you move out here, you know what I'm saying? You could be a new nigga and be moving with some niggas that everybody respects, and it's going to seem like you got to have the respect of somebody that's been out there for a minute. If you're rolling with somebody that's been out there for a minute, that people respect, you know, but
right.
Been out there for a minute. And people respect your brand and how you go down and the quality of your shit. But you're not making too much money. That's cool, too. You know, a lot of people give up on themselves when money's not coming in right and all that shit, man. That's, you know, that's just a part of the business, man. You know, a lot of people want to lie like they getting all this bread through a rap game and all this shit, but these niggas are lying, man. You know, anybody getting, like, big
yeah.
Super bread like that. But, you know, you got... You know, niggas like NBA YoungBoy and people like that, you know, but they numbers are ridiculous. You know, these niggas ain't waiting on a digital royalty check that, you know, that ain't even, you know, $100. You know, so, you know, it's just about how you know, the game has changed. It's just about how you leverage. And everything, man. It's got to be a balance, you know. You know, the key to the game right now is, you know, just put this shit out. You know, and you know, the more catalog you have, the more money you can make. You know, it's like building a store. You know, you start off with a jar of mayonnaise or, you know, a bottle of ketchup and shit. That's all you got. And at the end of the month, you got ketchup, mayonnaise, mustard. You know, the next month you get your bread, your meat, and then you just start building it up to pretty much till everybody wants a fucking sandwich. You know, it's gonna be on autopilot. You don't have to, you know, promote as much, and you don't have to do shit as much to get yourself off the ground. Right now, I'm just putting out, you know, I put out, you know, the meat market, and it did pretty well. I got Enemy Epic. And people really like that one. That one's like Enemy Epic is an album that I felt like I had to put out because I have songs that are classic songs that I never released that a lot of people know, but it wasn't available and they didn't know where to get it. So, you know, I put all these songs together and I put them all on an album and people really love that shit, you know. And I really appreciate y'all for playing it, you know. Enemy Epic. And then last Halloween, I put out a song called The Curse. That is
into a werewolf on the phone, and I tell a story about South Central Werewolf, how shit happened, you know, and that was, that's a really good song. Nipsey came to my session when I recorded that, and he sat there and just watched everything, and you know, I really appreciated him being there. I was over there I was in the 60s on a street called Bryanhurst, recording with a dude named Sale. I did six songs over there. Nipsey came to two of my sessions. And I'm lying. He came to three of my sessions. The third session, he sat on the porch outside the whole time. But Nip came to one of my sessions that I did the werewolf song to. And you know, I put that out on Halloween, and then now I'm about to do a single called What They Hit Before. It's a Dice Game song. I got the idea. Ice Cube had a song called What They Hit Before back in the day. And I kind of just like repurposed the idea and modernized the song. It's produced, the day one production is produced by Mel and G. Mel just signed a deal with Ice Cube. So I'm kind of glad that we did that work. You know, it's a dope ass song. It'll be out in a minute. I'm just getting my artwork together. I'm kind of deciding what we're going to do. You know, it's a lot to it. You know, I put make sure that, you know, people are just getting quality. I'm not the guy that's going to be putting out song, covers of garbage, and, you know, the album's not mixed right. You know, I'm a quality dude. You know what I'm saying? So I got to have a quality shit. And I'm going to sell you some bullshit and if you like it.
And I mean, that's important, man.
On top of that, on top of that, what I noticed with you with a corrupt style is, see, y'all guys know how to stick with a concept and y'all bring these stories to life. Like, even when I first heard you on the Tales from the Hood joint, it stuck strictly to the story. Like, y'all mentioned Crazy K, y'all had the dark theme to it. Stick with the concept of the movie.
That was crazy, bro, because all that shit was an accident. You know, all that shit was an accident. It wasn't that. It wasn't like how other things happened. You know, it was like, you know, Russ, my cousin. Nobody knew how to contact him. Nobody knew it except me. You know, so, you know, I got a call from this dude named Scott, SOC, and that was Grinch homeboy. Oh, and rest in peace, Grinch. Scott is up in the head. A little while after we recorded the Tales from the Hood soundtrack, so we're not here no more. Grinch, you know, he called me up and he was like, hey, bro, it's a dude from a record company called Avatar Records, a dude named Larry Robinson. He's putting together the soundtrack with Spike Lee, and he said, we got action, we could be on it. But, you know, Corrupt is the hottest shit right now, and he wanted to know if we could see if we can get him on there. I was like, man, shouldn't I go for that, bro? You know, he's going to say no. So we sat there for the longest, man, and tried to think of how we could use Corrupt. And so we used him. You know, we put him on there. We couldn't use him rapping on there, but he did, you know, background. He did some shit on my song. And we put him down as a producer. So that's why when you look at it, it says produced by Corrupt from the Dog Pound. But actually, it was produced by two other guys besides Corrupt, and that was Overdose and Superfly did that. So, you know, the first beat they had, I didn't like it. I felt like it was whack, and I walked out the studio. I walked out on everybody. It was Snoop Dogg, Corrupt. It was Lil Malik and Big Trey D. And a couple other dudes that was there came to my session, and I fucking walked out. I said, man, is this how we got to come out? I don't like this beat. I'm not doing this shit. And they, you know, and I walked out. And it was like, what the fuck? And so that's how we got the beat, you know, Corrupt came. He was like, well, what do you want? you know, I told him who I wanted and I told him, you know, and we did it. So those lyrics, you know, they we got the beat together and I went back home. Grinch came over with his old English and we laid down on our stomachs in his back house that my mom had. And we wrote our bars. I wrote the hook in the studio. And Larry Robinson was just amazed. Like, what the fuck, dog? Did that? Like, damn. He could hear the song before we laid the song, you know. So we went in and laid it, and the shit was a success, you know. And about 3 weeks later, you know, my managers at the time, Big Boom and Kenny Mack pull up and with his long ass box, he handed it to me. He looked excited. I pulled it out. It was my first plaque.
Okay.
I grabbed it and I ran down the street with that motherfucker screaming and shit. And I ran. And I was running and running. I ran about 4 blocks with my plaque. I was so fucking excited. And we never looked back after that. You know, everything, you know, I received other plaques. And, you know, I just never looked back. You know, my whole status on what I was doing, it went up, you know. And I'm meeting people, you know, Corrupt is hot. So I'm, you know, me and Corrupt is together every fucking day. And we was pulling up at all kind of different hotels and meeting up with people and doing shit. So, you know, half the people back in the day that I met through Corrupt because he was on so much and I was with him every fucking day, you know. So, you know, I was brushing shoulders with everybody. You know, we was the first people in the Snoop Dogg's house. You know, when Snoop, I used to be at the when they was recording the first Chronic album, I used to give Snoop Dogg rides back to the house. He didn't have a car. He was broke. You know, it was real shit. You know, and the shit, you know, I sat there and watched that shit unfold. I seen Snoop Dogg go from rags to fucking riches. You know, and I seen his life change right fucking before my face. You know, it's a handful of niggas that seen Snoop's transformation. And I'm one of them, and he never looked back. He was actually the proof, the first proof to me that this shit could happen, and you could really become somebody in music, you know. The Snoop is a regular dude, you know. It's not, you know, he's a regular nigga. He's not, you know, it ain't no Snoop Dogs, but. You know, when you're around him, he act regular. He's, you know, he's a cool dude. You know what I'm saying? He's not all, you know. So, to me, it was the proof that somebody from off the streets could come in, get on the mic, if they are somebody, as far as they have a personality and they know how to finesse their shit, they may become somebody. You know what I'm saying? Before it was like a dream, but now it's like a mission. You know, it can happen. You know, so you know. I seen a lot of shit unfold. I seen a lot of niggas get in a fight. I seen a lot of niggas, like, big stars get in the fight. And I seen a lot of shit. You know, we used to go to Pac's house. We was at Pac's house, like, 3 times a week. One of his little spots. It was in Burbank in the Oakwoods. And we was there, like, 3 times a week playing the fucking Mortal Kombat at Pac's house. You know, with the Sega Genesis. You know, and, that was interesting. I seen a lot of shit there, you know, and just a lot of shit. You know, I've been around for a while, and I'm still at the top of my game. The microphone, this microphone shit, do not stop. You know, and niggas think that they can spit, but they're not really on my level like that. You know, they rapping, but they not. They don't do what I do.
Explain the topic for a little bit, you know. Right quick, I'm going to ask you this because, you know, it just popped in me. Now, you didn't
right,
say,
right.
You and Corrupt, you know, that's your cousin and everything. Okay?
Yeah.
Can I hear you? I was going to, yeah. Hold on 1 second, make sure everything is good. Come on, bro.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you know, we going back into the, you know, the history events of what was going on in the good old days of Death Row. And Here's one question I got to ask, man. I hope you guys can get the footage of this. Now, did Corrupt really battle 2,000 MCs at the tunnel? If he did, we need that footage, man.
The Corrupt battled 2,000 MCs. He did not. But, to me, that was a figure of speech. But it was a lot of niggas. You gotta really think about it. How long it would take to battle 2,000 dudes?
Right, right.
It would take fucking 4 days or some shit.
So enemy, tell us how that story. How did that whole folklore? How did that urban legend start?
You talk about when you met Snoop?
No. He said it on New York.
He said it on there. He said that night I battled 2,000 MCs.
He said, can't none fuck with the DPG. Yeah, that was just something he had said, you know what I'm saying? But for sure, we didn't battle more than that.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? But that was for the song, and, you know, but we MCs that can say shit like that, you know what I'm saying? Because we've done it. We battled thousands of niggas all over L.A. You know, me and Corrupt used to, we used to ditch school and go to the malls and to the beaches and places like that and look for niggas that look like they rap. And if we seen a nigga that looked like they rap, we would ask them, hey, bro, you rap? They'd be like, yeah. All right, come over here. And we would serve their ass up. You know, and sometimes it'd be five niggas. And we'd serve each and every one of them niggas and walk away, and everybody be looking like, God damn, what the fuck just happened? You know, but, you know, that was my partner before he started fucking with Dad. You know, me and that nigga was a cold comp.
That's the essence of the culture. Now you talked about Snoop Enemy. When you met Nip, and you said Brian Hurst, and automatically thought of the legacy that Nip left behind, of course, with Brian Hurst, Baby, and Shooter. For our listeners out there, if you have not heard those two on 60s Anthem, oh my God, you need to do yourself a favor and listen to it.
I live in the 60s actually.
Yeah, man, them boys are serious. Rest in peace to G.I. Joe. We interviewed him a couple of years ago. Shout out to Pat Man, the Gunman, Jay Stone, of course, Brian Hurst, Shooter, all of them out there, man. What was it like meeting Nip in terms of, because you talked about when you met Snoop, what was it like meeting Nip in terms of, you know, what was it like to watch his growth?
His energy is it's incredible, bro. Nipsey wasn't, he was a man of, less words. He didn't say a lot. He didn't, you know, unless he was standing there with niggas that he's been fucking with for a while, he don't say much. Every time I seen him, you know, it was niggas talking to him. He wasn't talking to niggas. And he would just be listening and laughing and sitting there and shit with his socks pulled up all high and shit, and he had to he used to pull up in little nice cars and shit like that, you know, and when he pulled up, everybody would be like excited as fuck. First time I seen him, I looked him dead in his face and I was like, bro, you look like young Snoop, like a motherfucker. And he just stared at me. He didn't even say nothing. He just looked. You know, he didn't say a lot. He didn't say much, but his energy was, he had a cold energy to him. You know, he was a real dude. You know, when he spoke, you know, he made sure that it was understandable. You know, he would speak in a way that whoever he was talking to, it was understandable. You know, he didn't want to say shit that was gonna go over your head. Wow. So he chose his words carefully, and he was a cold energy, bro. I hate that we lost him, man, because he brought something to the table that a lot of people been trying to bring to the table, but they didn't have the ability, you know. And
yeah,
we lost.
We were in the process.
Yeah,
we were in the process of trying to get him on the show before he passed. We were in touch with some people that he knew, and we were going to get him on. So that hurt us just as bad when, you know, he got taken away. When you look at that movement in terms of what you saw with Nip and his independent hustle, how you have applied it to your identity, what do you tell artists out there in terms of what it takes to really stick to your guns with this music shit and really, really be pragmatic and aggressive in terms of moving your product?
You know, I'm going to tell anybody this, bro, like, stay consistent. Consistency is one thing. Don't stop. You know, when you stop, when you have your life problems, when problems in life pop up, a lot of people, man, that do this shit, they give up on the craft and they stop doing it to handle shit that's going on in their life. And by the time their little problems get solved, they don't do it no more. That means it was on them instead of in them. You know, but when you do this shit, no matter what, I don't give a fuck if you got babies on the way. I don't give a fuck if you got throughout your house, man, bro. I done been throughout my, I done lost houses. I done all kind of shit, bro, but I keep this shit going, bro. It's effortless. I just keep going. You just don't stop, no matter what. I did the song, bro. I remember when I did the song, when Nipsey came to the sessions, bro. That was a while back, bro. I remember when I did them five songs, I didn't have nowhere to go. You know, I was sleeping out my car for like 6 months. You know, so, you know, a lot of the songs that you record, bro, if you keep your shit going, man, and stay consistent, no matter what, do shit no matter what, bro, they kind of mark time for you, bro. As you go on, I can look back at all the hundreds of songs that I got, bro, and I know I can tell you exactly where I was, where I recorded it, and what the fuck I was doing when I did that shit. I got songs I can listen to that date all the way back to when I was like 14, bro. I got songs, my first job was called 100 Posse. I was 15. And it was me and another guy named Agent Work. And Work stood for a weapon of raw knowledge. And this guy was the real deal. And we was rapping, we had little cool band noises, we was wearing t-shirts with neckties on and shit. We was doing all kind of crazy shit, bro, but that was my first little group. You know, but Work kept with the leadership. Oh, man, I'm the leader of the group and all that shit. And that shit was like, I didn't like that shit. I don't like me to tell me they leave me. That was cool for a while, but, you know, after a while, I just said, bro, look, I'm quitting. I'm going solo. I don't need nobody rapping with me. But he made it, you know, oh, so you throwing in the towel, huh? You quitting. I was like, no, I ain't quitting. I'm just not rapping with your ass. You know? And I think that happened like the next day. And I've been by myself ever since. You know, Morticia, that's my other rapping partner. That's my sister. She's legendary. And you know, I put her on the mic early. You know, she's on the Doggy Danger album. You know, the school dog. And Cola, what's the girl's name? Cola, Big Chan, and Trey Buford. Yeah. And that was a good album, man. More kids on there. She's spinning in there. And that's my real rapping partner. That's my biological sister. We got the same mother and the same father. And she's pretty much the female me. You know, her and Rage hang out. And to me, her and Rage, are the greatest rapping writers as far as women go, as far as anybody go, really. They're great. You know, it's like, you know, Enrage being in public eye view, like one of the greatest to ever do it, like really, really, really respect my sister for what and how she does her thing. You know, and pretty much you really have no choice but to respect how she spit because her spit is stupid, you know, and it's like, you know, like, again, it's, you know, some people, they're good, but they look like they're trying so hard to be that good. You know, we spit that shit, our shit is up. You know, our voices have changed. We got the same fucking voices. We need to sing new songs. So, you know, we should dress in that way. But, yeah, man. It's about consistency, man, and, you know, keep your shit going, man. You got to stick to the focus. Everybody's changing up a lot. Try this. No, bro, stick to the fucking program. Or you can meet somebody one day. That's something that could happen. If you start sticking to the program. If you don't stick to the program, if you don't stick to the program and you're not consistent, then you kind of set yourself in the regular box, the basic box. You're doing what everybody else is doing the shit. You got to set yourself apart in some kind of way. You know, and try to have a signature sound. Try to have a sound that ain't nobody else doing, sound like. Listen to other people. And be like, okay, I could play 10 songs right now. If I play my song right now, do my shit stand apart from all these other songs? You got to ask yourself shit like that. You know, and just keep it going, man. Stick to the program, bro. That's to me, that's the number one rule, bro. Stick to the program. And the next thing you know, instead of being somebody that's trying to become that, by sticking to the program, you're going to be that by default. You know, but if you keep trying to be something, you might never become that. You just got to do it.
And that's facts. You got to be able to really commit yourself to it. I mean, a lot of people that you've mentioned, we've had the pleasure of interviewing, you know, yourself included. I mean, you mentioned Razzcast, you interviewed, you know, Cognac, you know, Big Chan. We've had them all on the show.
Crooked Eye used to tell people, hey, I'd be on the phone and Crooked Eye used to be like, tell enemy, I said, what's up? And I'd be like, who the fuck is that? He was telling people to tell me what's up, and I didn't know who the fuck he was, you know, until later when I met him. I met Crook like in 90.
Okay.
I met Crook like in 90, and he was coming up to the Black Hole recording studio. He had a brother named Maniac, and they were rap partners, and, you know, they had a lot of different shit. They used to rap together, back and forth type shit, and like a modern day Run DMC type shit. But these niggas was lyrical, and you know, they had some shit, Click Pop, You Don't Stop, and shit like that. And Crooked Eye was a nigga that Crooked Eye was the only nigga that was spitting on our level that was not from our immediate circle. Now he's from our immediate circle. But back in the day, you know, Crooked was, I didn't even know where he was from. He was from Long Beach. You know, he would pull up at the studio, they'd jump out the car rapping and just turned up. But the nigga, he was the only nigga that was spitting on our level that was spitting like us, that don't rap behind us and don't sound primitive. Was the only nigga doing that.
Brooke was... And a lot of people got to understand this too. That Crook,
he's a monster
for what he did. Yeah, and he had his record deal at 17 on Virgin Records back in the day.
Did you know that?
Yeah. He was 17 years old when he first signed to Virgin Records. The first time I'd actually heard him was on Corrupt Streets as a Mother. I Ain't Shit Without My Homeboys in '99. You know when he, you know when that record dropped. Yeah.
I was there. At the name that I was standing right there.
I mean, but Itabi, you've been around all this different history in terms of touching with the greats, and obviously your influence has been as influential and impactful on them as there has been with yours. To see that new wave of California hip-hop coming in the 90s, what was it like just to watch all of that cultivate? Did you all know that this was going to be the defining elements to what was going to be the next generation of legends coming in?
No. It was like we was just living it. You know, it was hard to just, like, point at somebody and say, you're going to be the shit, 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 you're going to be the shit. It's hard to do that because it's a lot of niggas right now that I have in my mind right now that were spitting on our level, but nobody knows them, and they stopped doing it before anybody got a chance to discover them.
Mm.
But there was a lot of dudes that was around that was real spitters, bro, that, like I said, you let your life problems fuck off your what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? And I've been through a lot of life problems, but you just keep doing your shit. You know what I'm saying? It's been times where I didn't have a shitload of money, and it's been times where I didn't have shit. You know? It's like even right now, bro, it's like I'm making some money, but I've always been the type of dude that I keep a job, bro. I'm not doing another five shit right now. I'm just living right now. But you know, 9 times out of 10, I got a job I go to at some point. No matter how much money I'm making in the rap, it's just how I was raised, bro. It's just how I was brought up, bro. You know, I remember when Tales from the Hood came out, bro. I got paid like 4 different cameras, bro, and I had bread. I was still going to work. You know,
mm-hmm.
Like, why?
What did it take back then to get a record deal?
Huh?
What did it take back then to get a record deal?
It was easy back in the day, bro. I ain't gonna lie to you, man. If this shit sounded good, you could walk in somewhere, take a set tape, and walk out with some money. Now, it's very rare anybody was able to do that. You know, they want to see your streams, they want to see they want to have a following already. And also, they want to be able to put money with their money. Most companies not just going to give you money. It's not happening. They want you to match what they're going to put into you. They want you to put your own money where your mouth is. You know, a lot of people are finding this out. So instead of sitting down and wasting your time with me, people have been going to envy. Fuck it. I'm putting my own shit out. You know, if I got to match y'all with money, fuck it. I might as well just do shit on my own. You know what I'm saying? So that's where we at now. It's a lot more simple than anybody, you know, like a fucking monkey to put a record out, man. You know, you got all kind of different channels to put records out with, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, it's just, they made it really easy now, you know what I'm saying? That's why the industry is overflooded with all these non-talented people that think they're somebody. But these are a bunch of nobodies that think they're somebody because they make it easy for you to look like a somebody when you're actually a nobody.
Mm.
You know, there's many dudes out here that's, you know, they all in their swag and they might be serving a little bit of dope or got a little hustle or maybe they beneficiary somewhere and they paying for a little bit of bread or something like that. You know, they make themselves look good. They go shopping, they go, you know, do all their thing, but they're not selling no records. They're lying about their numbers to get deals. You know, and then when you lie about your numbers to get deals, you get a record deal and you own. You know, but as soon as you do a show where 100,000 people are supposed to be at that motherfucker and 5 people show up, that's when they know that you pay for your numbers. You know, and that's a bad situation because when another company finds out about that, it's like you blackball yourself. You know, it's like...
Yeah, you know how them numbers be juiced. Them numbers be juiced for real. Like, you be seeing these guys, they got like... Then within like 3 or 4 hours, they have like 5 million views. Then you see all the comments be nothing but bots.
Right. You can tell when people come to the shit. Like, you can tell. I'd rather have 100 likes than
1,500 likes to get a real like or real hit. I don't think 1,500 fake hits because at the end of the day, the numbers is not going to pop up. You're just paying for the fake shit to happen. You know, that's how thirsty niggas is. You know, they want it so bad, but it's not for them. You know, we in a business that so many people are trying to do this shit, but it's really not for people. It's not for most people that's doing it. But people think that they can go to the store and buy a drum machine and, you know, hip-hop is hip-hop. That's cool. You know, hip-hop could be for everybody, but the rap business and becoming somebody in the rap business is not for everybody. And most people, 90% people that get into it find out that this is a true statement. You know, I've been around everybody, bro. If you don't know me, I don't know where you've been, bro. I know every fucking body. You know, to the point where I go in a house, go in a refrigerator, you know, I know everybody that's somebody out here, bro. I've been out here for a while. You know, it's just, you know, I've been real humble and just chilling, bro. I do features. I pay, you know, people pay me for features. There's been times where, you know, I've done three features, you know, like, which is rare, but, you know, sometimes it's necessary. You know, if you're just chasing the dollar through your whole career, one day you're going to shoot yourself in the foot. You gotta do some freebies sometimes, bro. You gotta feed the culture, bro. Everything can't be money. Everything can't be that all the time, bro. You gotta do it for the craft too, sometimes, bro. You have to keep you afloat. You know, that's what keeps you relevant when you do shit behind the scenes. It keeps you going, bro. A lot of dudes ain't even recognized for being on the mic no more. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I keep my shit going, bro. You know, and, you know, I go places. You know, I go places where they're doing things that, you know, I make sure that they hear me. They hear my voice. You know, I don't have when I walk, my presence is pretty strong. You know, so when I'm there, motherfuckers know I'm there. And I don't got to be real loud or nothing like that. It's just, you know, feed off the energy that keeps me got a mind of its own, you know. You know, I got this, you know, I'm living in L.A., you know, I'm in gangland. There ain't nothing but gangbangers over here. And, you know, I'm comfortable with it. I'm cool with that, you know. But, you know, just, for example, my video, I laid out, I'm walking through the hood with a hoodie on my head. But now when I walk around with this hoodie on my head, people are like, hey. So my shit is in reverse now. So now, when I don't want to be seen, I pull my hoodie off. But when I put that hoodie on, motherfuckers be like, hey, what's up, hey. And that shit kind of fucking bugs me, you know what I'm saying? Because usually the hoodie is supposed to be, throw that on for your low-key shit. I got to take my shit off.
Man.
The total opposite.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I got a lot of shit coming.
And now, what made you want to name your album The Meat Market?
It just came to me one day, like my son's name, bro. It just came to me. I was just sitting there, and it just hit me. Same thing with my son's name. You know, my son's on the album, and he's on like four songs. You know, his name is The Great. And you know, same way I named him, bro. Me and his mom was just sitting there, and it just hit me. Pop! I said, "His name is Ryan." She was like, "All right." And that was that. Same thing. I was just sitting there one day, bro, and it just hit me. Bam! The Meat Market. I said, "That's it." It was that simple. You know, we recorded that shit. You know, I recorded that album is all over the place, bro. You know, Badass. That, you know, Being Bad, rest in peace. Being Bad, my house, man. And, you know, he spent the night for a couple weeks at a time, man. Being Bad, we had a ball at the house. You know what I'm saying? you know, smoking and drinking. I had 3 barbecue grills in the back. I had 3 bedrooms. I had, you know, a lot of women in my house. And, you know, we just have a ton of fun over there, bro. And we ended up recording the song in my bedroom. And it's a weed song. Mr. Grimm. Mr. Grimm did the beat. Actually, it's Fender's beat, but you know, it's by Mr. Grimm. And, you know, we recorded that, and then we got Ground Zero, Ground Zero's Me, Slip of Phone, Rest in Peace, Red Rum, 781, Rest in Peace, Corrupt, Bosco, Lil Leap, and Mortician. And that song is my biggest song on the album. We got a ridiculous amount of hits. And he died. Gunn died right before we was going to do the video. Slip was already dead. That was Slip's last verse on that song. And Gunn died right before I was going to do some video shit to that. You know, so then when he got sick, you know, Gunn used to call me every day when he was sick, and he was... you know, he was in bad shape, man. He was, you know, his voice started changing, like, to, like, the monster type of shit. Like, you couldn't tell with him on the other side of the phone. And, you know, he went blind in one of his eyes. And, you know, he was deteriorating while he was talking to me, bro. And he was crying over the phone and shit. Shit had me crying. And, you know, I would start crying, and the nigga, he would get frustrated. Like, man, I'm just cry, man. I'd be like, bro, this is like fucking me up. It's like tearing me down, being on the phone with this nigga, more like my cousin. Rum is my cousin as well as Corrupt. You know, so, you know, this shit was really, really rough on me, bro. You know, and it was just rough, man. And he ended up dying, and, you know, he told me, man, like, bro, I'm on my way out, was his words. And when he said that, man, I just broke down, bust down in tears, bro. I just was crying like a bitch. And I just couldn't help it, man, because this dude meant and means so much to me right now, bro. And he's a Pyro. He's from Pyro. I'm a Crip. You know, but we're cousins, bro, and we were together before any of that type of shit, bro. You know, and it just hurt me. It's hurting me right now talking about it. But, you know, so I tried to do a video to the song, but just, it was just weird, you know, and, you know, I was going to cartoon the video, but the shit was hella expensive. And then I was going to go down to the school and see if I can get a student to cartoon the video, but that was kind of tedious. So I ended up not doing the video, but here's the good thing about the interview today. You could do shit anytime you fucking want to. Right now, I could take the Meat Market album, and I could wait right now. For this day, I could wait a year. Right now. And I could still put videos out from that album. You know, so, you know, the industry is just different now. It's changed, man, and, it's a lot more shit that we're able to do that we wasn't able to do before, or we didn't know how to do it because that was somebody else's lane. A lot easier, like I said, you know, a monkey could put a record out, but you got to know your shit. You got to know how to, you know, it's about quality control, bro. It's not about how many songs you got or how many songs you can put out. You know, it's not about that, you know, because a lot of these niggas right now got 100 albums out. They're not making no money. And nobody knows the albums about. You know, like I say, I like taking my time with the shit. You know, put out quality music. I don't care about having 100 songs out. You know, if the shit ain't right. Right now you can go on my shit and listen to my music, and all my shit is right. I can think of it's one song on the Meat Market that wasn't mixed correctly. Nobody knows that, though, but me. It wasn't mixed correctly because it was two-tracked. And it was a song that I had that, you know, it was a song that I had that I had lost. And I wanted to still use it because of the things I was saying on there and who produced it, you know. That was produced by Mosey and D. That was a, you know, he was popular. You know, so I got two songs by him on that album, and it came out well. You know, the quality of that song is less than all my other shit, not just on that album, ever. One song, bro. You know what I'm saying? So that's how tight I am with my shit, bro. It's quality over quantity every time. You know, give me one pair of Jordans. I don't want 20 pairs of Jordans.
Well, and ultimately, as you go along, I mean, is there anybody that you want to work with that you haven't worked with yet?
Glad you said that, bro. Actually, no. you know, there's people that I would work with, but there's not nobody like I have in mind that I like, oh, man, I've got to work with him. I want to work with him. There's nobody like that right now. You know, but there are a handful of people that I would work with. You know, it's a couple of people that I want to do more new shit with. You know, I want to do some shit with my homie RBX. I think that would be extra hot. You know, RB, we got a couple, but you know, the other type of songs. I want RB to go, man, this shit. You know, I want to, I would like to do something with Thomas Cookie. That's, you know, that's my bro, but it's doing something with him would be different for me because we have a history. That's my bro. You know what I'm saying? I put a couple of things in the meat market that was cool. You know, but one of the movies ended up doing some weirdo shit, you know, some sideways shit on the street shit. I had to stop fucking with the nigga, you know, and I love the nigga to death, but when you think I'm the one, bro, that's going to be real dangerous. And, you know, it's going to go bad, bro, because I'm still out here in the street doing shit, you know what I'm saying? And I don't really go for that. I don't go for the blatant disrespect and talking to me like I'm a bitch and doing shit like I'm a bitch. It's not going to work out for you. You know what I'm saying? I got a squad and I got a big ass team. I got niggas that roll these streets and, you know, we got guns. We do all that shit, bro. You know what I'm saying? So it's going to go bad when a nigga is thinking I'm on the rapper shit or something like that, because I'm just the opposite. You know, it might be bang bang. You know what I'm saying? I'm serious about my shit. You know, but if it's all respect and we cool, then, you know, we're not going to have no issues, no problems. But if nigga thinks he's going to, you know, he's sticking his chest out and tripping, I'm going to organize something for your ass, nigga. It's not going to go right. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I just like to keep that balance. You know what I'm saying? I don't be around niggas I don't know like that. You know what I'm saying? If I walk in a room somewhere and two niggas start coming in a room that I don't know, I'm out. You know, so I don't hang with a bunch of niggas I don't know and give niggas time to be potting on me and all that shit. I don't do that because it's going to go bad. It's going to go bad, you know. And just stay away from niggas that ain't solid. You know, even if we're doing music, if I don't know you, you got to have something solid about you. I'm just not, you know, everything I do is real petite. You know, everything. Everybody I'm around, everything I do, nothing is random.
Especially in this game, man. Like, you know, a lot of this business is like, from the characters, from the people that do the podcasting, from the interviewers, a lot of this is smoke and mirrors. A lot more than people think it is.
Right. You know, and then you got opportunists. You got people that want to just fuck with you just to have that, like opportunists. Like, but as soon as you give them that time to do something, they, you know, they got what they need, so that they start acting weird and all that shit or whatever, you know. And I got homies that, you know, I'm not gonna say it like that. I'm gonna say that I got this nigga that I thought was my homie, that we got hangout history and all this shit or whatever. But niggas do one thing on some weird shit, and it let you know what level you on with them. You know what I'm saying? I got a homie right now. I'm not gonna say his name. You know who the nigga is, so, but we went over to Richie Rich pad. Richie Rich got a studio. Richie Rich is the LA Dream Team. If y'all don't remember that was legendary old school shit. Yo baby, you know. And that's my bro. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, me and this dude have been over there and we recorded some shit for Weed Maps. And the song is fucking bananas, bro. Like, the way I'm spitting on that and the shit that I'm saying, I'm talking about pop. And I'm talking about the shit, you know, I smoke chronic in the 90s with Tupac. Check out my weed game. It's the same as Snoop got. You know, I'm spitting shit on that shit, and, but I never got a copy of this shit, right? So I go to this nigga's house, and he start playing Snoop, and the song come on. So I said, oh, my nigga, why I don't got that? Oh, I don't know. Send that shit to me. He dragged his feet about sending it. Let me remind you, this is not this nigga's song. It's our shit that we did. And he kept dragging his feet about sending it to me. You know, and I was at his house for like a couple hours at that time. You know what I'm saying? So I wait a few minutes, ask him, yeah, hey, bro, email me that. Or, like, send me that. All right, I got you. So long story short, the nigga never sent the shit. I had to go to Coachella about a month ago. A little bit over a month ago, I went to Coachella. And I was out there for a month and 2 weeks. I told the nigga, bro, I need that because I'm gonna be out in Coachella, bro. I'm gonna be able to listen to it and play it and shit like that. All right, I got you. The nigga never sent me shit. I'm blowing the nigga up now. Sending me messages, text messages. I'm calling him now. His phone's picking up on the first ring. You know, and to me, that's sucker shit. Cause bro, if that's our song, bro, and I'm spitting on that motherfucker, and fuck is you hiding the song from me for, bro? Why you don't want me to have the song that's not even yours, bro? Why you got your phone picking up on the first ring, bro? Why I'm leaving you messages and you not responding to my fucking messages, bro? We were just hanging out together at your house for like 5 hours, bro, with your family and everybody. But on the flip side, you got my homies to the point where you can't give me my fucking phone, bro? That shit, like, really rubbed me the wrong way. That shit destroys friendship, shit like that. Because there shouldn't be no shit like that happening. You know?
That's true.
You know, nigga, you rapping with, you on songs with Enemy, nigga. And I'm not on songs with you. You on songs with me, nigga. And this shit is fucked up, bro, because I thought you was my bro. Like, I looked at this nigga like family. You know what I'm saying? But when you have it in you to do weirdo shit like that, I got to leave you alone. It's going to get worse one day. You know, so all shit like that keep me fucking with somebody. You know what I'm saying? To me, it's petty. You know what I'm saying? And you acting like that, that's weirdo shit, bro. That's weirdo shit. You know, so I only fuck with, I'm real weird about who I fuck with, bro, and who I talk to, who I'm around. You know, I don't want to even sound weird about it. I just, I'm cool on people, bro. I fuck with you if you're humble and you're cool and you're not on no bullshit. I don't hear you say no bullshit before I decide to sit down with you. but I'm really careful about who I'm around, bro, and who I put my time towards. Even if it's a little shit, even if it's some shit that don't matter, I make it matter. You know, cause you can't,
and that's how it should be.
You can't be around anybody, bro. You know, so you got to set the bar. You got to set the bar of quality. You got to set your do's and don'ts. These are the do's and don'ts that are allowed by people to be when they're around you. Certain shit is out. If I'm around certain niggas and they start doing certain shit, that's out. You got to go around bouncing. But I don't just sit there and be around anybody, bro. If I'm on the phone with you, then at one point, I respected you as a person. And we it, bro, because you got to be right.
Well, you got to protect the energy. You got to protect everything in terms of, you know, all of that, man. I mean, you know,
you got to protect all your,
you got
the
wrong people.
Work,
yeah.
Exactly, Max, because people don't realize that when you're doing collabs with people, niggas ain't BMF. These niggas ain't BFS. This is business. You know what I'm saying? Unless it's like it's family or unless it's cliquish. A lot of people, for the most part, these collabs today is based off business. It's not based off respect nowadays.
That's right. You know, and then there's still a lot of people, man, they studio life. That's another thing, bro. They want that. They don't really care about the music business. You know. They just want to be able to come with their weed and their drink and sit down, niggas smoke, talk, chill. It's like for the fucking social event. You know, a lot of people are just that, you know, like, you know, that's what they in it for, just the social shit. You know, they do it for a little while, and then you don't see them no more. You know, but, you know, like I said, it's a lot of history and a lot of shit I can talk about. But, you know, Day One said he was going to give me Vlad interviews and shit like that. And I got a lot of shit to talk about. And I saw a lot of shit. You know, even that, you know, this guy that I just told you about with the song, even, you know, I'm not gonna say nothing about this shit. But, you know, the shit is crazy, bro. The things that people bring light and they just want you to accept it. I accept it. You know, but I'm not gonna do it.
And you shouldn't. And the main thing is you always wanna keep your business right in terms of what's right for you. I mean, Enemy, this has been dope, man. I mean, we appreciate you coming on, man. It took, like King said, it took some time, but we actually got it done. We don't want Blog Talk kicking us off air, especially
right.
The midst of a monumental build. You're welcome back anytime, of course, because we definitely got more to build on. Tell everybody where they can find you, and thank you again for coming on with us.
All right, man, right now I'm you know, all my shit is in reconstruction right now as far as like where to go and everything. But right now, you can find all my shit on Spotify. My shit can really be everywhere right now, but I'm kind of like positioning certain things or whatever. But you can find all my material, all my albums, everything is on Spotify right now. My shit is on YouTube, Apple Music, everywhere you can find it. THENME. That's about it.
Definitely, man.
All right.
Definitely, man. We definitely appreciate you taking the time to join us, man. And it was a dope build.
All day, man. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate y'all giving me this airtime or whatever, man. Is there anything else y'all want to say before I bounce?
No, we good, man. We just appreciate you coming, man. And like I said, you know, we definitely got to get you back on for a part two. Once again, thank you so much. You know, we really appreciate it.
Let me know. I'll slide back on y'all.
Absolutely.
No doubt, man. For the meantime, y'all, I'm about to go in and knock this. I'm going to knock down this one more shot of moonshine since the Lakers lost. So y'all have a good night.
All right.
Jeez. All right, bro. Y'all take care, man.
You too, man. Thank you again. One.
Yes, sir.
One.